Blog Talk Radio. Readers Entertainment Radio, where variety is the spice of life.
Wow. Hello and welcome to Readers Entertainment Radio. I'm your host, Sheila English. And tonight we're going to be talking to a real Renaissance woman, author and radio personality, Ingrid Cummings. And she's a lot more than just that. It's just amazing, all the things that she does. And I think this will be very, very interesting to, especially to all you people out there who think, oh, you know, I can't do it all. I can't possibly, you know, do all the things I'd love to do. I think this is going to be very helpful for those of you who are interested in, you know, how do those people do that? How is it that they can follow their dreams and do all these wonderful, crazy things and become successful? And, you know, sometimes it just feels like, you know, there are certain people who that happens to, but it can happen to you too. And you're going to find out a little bit about how to get that to happen for you. And we're going to be asking the question, what resolutions are you actually going to keep? Now, for our listeners, you can join in the live chat by logging in at blogtalkradio.com/circle-of-7. You can also call in and chat with us at 646-200-4071. And an hour after the show, you can download the podcast, or even you can embed it in your own site or on your social profile. And Ingrid, I want to thank you for joining us.
Well, good evening, Sheila. I'm glad to be with you. What a great way, an inspiring way to kick off the new year here.
You know, I'm really excited about this. We've been talking for a couple of months now, I think, when we first started talking about getting your video done, and we were chatting about how we were going to get this, because the video is very unique, because it really has a lot. It talks about your book, but it's not just that. It's not centered in just one specific area. You do so many things, and I found the video to be so interesting and captivating. But so we've talked for a few months now, and I've really been looking forward to doing this show with you and letting other people meet you. So let's go ahead and get started. I called you a Renaissance person, and is it practical or relevant to be a Renaissance person in this day and age?
Well, that's a great question. A lot of people would say no, not necessarily. It is practical anymore. Back in the days of Jefferson or Da Vinci, certainly, the most accomplished members of society in that era were able to know everything, literally everything that there was to be known at that time, and to do everything and have their fingers in every pot. Many people would argue that today, with knowledge doubling every 10 years or so, whatever the figure is, that it just simply is not realistic or relevant or practical or possible to know, do more than just one or two things these days. But I would, the entire thesis of my book called The Vigorous Mind is that, yes, it is possible to be a Renaissance person these days. And I list all kinds of people, not just historical individuals, but people living among us today in our era who are taking a big bite of life, a big swath, claiming a full swath of life. They're curious people. They have wide-ranging, cross-trained brains. Adaptive, they're more adaptive than the rest of us, I would say. They're versatile, and they are more cognitively nimble than specialists are. I'm using the word Renaissance person as a synonym for a generalist, someone who is a generalist as differentiated from a specialist. And I just think that's a glorious tension between those two camps there. And my entire book is about exploring that energy between generalists and specialists.
Well, I love that term, cognitively nimble. I love I think that's yours. I think you own that.
Where's my lawyer? I need to brand that.
Tomorrow we're going to hear people saying that. Oh, well, yes, but now I'm cognitively nimble. now tell me, what does Kaizen. Am I saying that right? Kaizen?
Have to no.
Is it Kaizen?
Kaizen. Well, it is. Sheila, that is a Japanese word. It's Kaizen. And I make a big point of referencing Kaizen in my book. And since it is derived from the Japanese, there are alternate pronunciations for that. I've heard a number of things, so don't feel bad. I pronounce it Kaizen. And here's what it's about. Kaizen, as people, our listeners who may work in the business world and manufacturing may have heard this, and I am adapting this term, Kaizen, to the model of cognitive improvement. Kaizen actually is a term that simply means making continuous, tiny, or incremental improvements in your job and in your life. It's continuous process improvement, in other words. And it has been demonstrated with great success in many industries, especially the auto industry, and particularly Toyota has made great strides in just evolving, constantly evolving the quality of their product using Kaizen. It is about setting up goals that are that tackle the process of making a car. It could be making a cake. It could be making your brain more cognitively nimble. Whatever it is, you want to harness Kaizen to make little headway, bit by bit. You recognize what next little step needs to be done in this process of building a better brain, building a better car, building a house, whatever it is you're after, whatever your goal is. You need to simply recognize what you need to do as the next tiny little minute step in the process. And once you do that, ask yourself, how can I make it better than I did yesterday? Whatever it may be. Let's say you want to learn to play the violin. What is the next little step that you can recognize and determine to be the next step that you can do better than you did yesterday with it? And that's all Kaizen is. You make the headway, make that little minute bit of headway in the process, and then hold the gain the next day as you pick your violin up again the next day. You hold the gains and then look for the next tiny little incremental process improvement. And in that way, you can make big breakthroughs over time. It's just amazing what headway you can make.
Now, you were talking earlier about generalists. Now, are you making a stand against specialists? Don't you want a highly specialized medical doctor treating your ailment, for instance?
It's a great question. Of course you do. Yes, I am not. And I fear all the time, Sheila, that people maybe are misunderstanding my message when it comes to generalists versus specialists. I fear they're maybe misunderstanding it as I'm anti-specialist somehow. And no, it could not be further from the truth. I really want to be on record as saying I revere specialists. Almost all of us do work as specialists in our economy, and I think that's great. And like you said, if I had an arcane legal problem or a convoluted medical ailment that needed attention, you better believe, well, for example, if I break my bone, you better believe I don't want to go to a family practice doctor. I'm going to go to an orthopedic specialist, of course, of course.
Okay.
And if there is one that's, in fact, where I live, there is, believe it or not, there is an orthopedic specialist who does just left shoulders. Can you believe that? That is how specialized his practice has become. So if I injure my left shoulder, sure, bring me the left shoulder specialist. But what I do hope is that this individual, this guy who has the left shoulder orthopedics practice, imagine being that person and only doing left shoulders for the entirety of a 40-year career. Can you imagine how bored and dull and flat that would get after a while? So I do hope, for the sake of all the specialists out there, and our legion, our number is legion, that we are getting lots of cognitive exercise, working the whole rest of your brain that is not involved in fixing and repairing left shoulder injuries. Because here we have this brilliant individual who's been drawn to orthopedic medicine, and so much of that wonderful brain, powerful brain of theirs is lying fallow. So my point in my book is that, yes, we need specialists and we want them in our civilization, but they need to be taking an active strategic role in exercising and stimulating the entire rest of their brain to build a truly cross-trained brain.
I really love that concept. I can say for myself now, as you know, I now work. I've worked in the entertainment field since 2002. But prior to that, I was in clinical laboratory for 18 years. I was even the president of the California Society of Clinical Laboratory Science. So, it very very different going from a scientific field into the entertainment field. But one thing that I realized, this totally ties into what you just said. I specialized in clinical laboratory science and in pediatrics specifically. And I think the one thing that if you're not careful when you're a specialist, and I'm just talking really for myself, it's easy to let yourself become only that one thing. And, you can stagnate yourself and not even realize it, that you've done it, that you're not growing anymore because you've just become so focused on that one specialty. And I found that at the end of the day, that actually really harmed me, that I didn't realize I had become so focused that I had missed out on so many other opportunities. So, I totally agree with what you're saying, that, you need to have specialists. People would come to me and, if they had a child, they wanted me to work with their child. But, it's like you go home and then what are you?
That's exactly it. And, that's ironic that you are the Renaissance woman here, Sheila, because you at some point, subliminally or whatever, you decided you had to work with more of your brain. You had a feeling of what I term it mental malnutrition in my book. That's what I call it. You hit a wall and you said, I think there's got to be more. And I'm sure there were many other complicating factors involved. But, boy, your mental health is better for broadening your scope of endeavor, don't you think?
Absolutely. And the whole mental malnutrition, I really felt that. Now, it did take me having this, I don't know if it's really a self-awareness, but maybe a general awareness of everything about me and where I stood in my life, for me to realize that I was mentally malnourished, that there was a lot more that I could be doing with my brain that I just hadn't considered. So which is part of the reason why when you and I start to talk, we could talk for hours. I never get tired of talking to you. I found someone who talks my language. It's so great to talk to somebody who has that vision, who sees, yes, specialist is still important, you still want that, but, see this broader picture, do more for yourself, do more for your brain, and you can have so much more in your life. And I really, really, appreciate that. Now, tell me, how is it possible to actually alter the architecture of the brain by engaging in more of a smorgasbord of activities?
It used to be years ago, neuroscientists thought that the adult brain was not malleable. In other words, that it couldn't be altered by experience or anything else. But after about the age, 8, 13, 21, whatever, the adult brain was finished and you really couldn't learn much. And in fact, what happened to the adult brain, they speculated, was that it lost cells. It lost neurons as it aged very inalterably. Well, the more recent research has shown that to be wrong, and isn't this glorious news? It is possible for our brains to, till any age, well into adulthood, well into old age, to alter the brain at the molecular level. This is called neuroplasticity, and it is what is making the field of neuroscience so, so exciting. And in my book, The Vigorous Mind, I quote and dealt with gloriously optimistic and engaged neuroscientists from all over the country. Brain, it turns out, highly adaptable. The brain, the human brain at any age, craves challenge and craves novelty. And what is so encouraging specifically about this is that let's go back to our orthopedic surgeon who's treating just left shoulders. That doctor can make himself a better left shoulder orthopedic surgeon by doing things that are completely different than that. In other words, you normally think he would need to practice more medicine to become better at medicine. But I'm saying, thanks to this neuroscience plasticity, if he went rock climbing, of all things, he could make himself a better physician. If he learned to cook, if he learned to practice judo, all of these sorts of counterintuitive activities build up interconnections in the brain and build up this neuroplasticity we're talking about, and actually build a bigger, better, more interconnected brain, which our surgeon can then apply to his specialty. So that's the real counterintuitive good news. You need to build a better brain, and believe it or not just because, hey, it's a cool, fun thing to do, but it will actually make you better at your primary purpose in life, which is generally going to be a specialty. So there you have it.
Well, then let me ask you this, and again, this is just referring back to myself, my own experience trying to apply this to my life. I have found recently, you go through like these cycles. For me, I write scripts, and I can go for months and months and crank out a script and not have a problem, and then all of a sudden, I'll hit a wall. And I've even told clients, I know this is due today, but you don't want me to work on this today. I have nothing. Nothing is going to make this good. And what I have found just recently, over the last couple of months, my husband and I elected to go learn ballroom dancing, of all things, okay? And I found we went out and we actually went to a social event and we were ballroom dancing. It had nothing to do with my script writing, but I found when I got home, whatever had been blocking me was gone. And I wasn't sure, was it because I walked away from it, just to kind of let it go, or was it the physical activity that helped me just kind of, feel better? But would you say that's an example of what you're talking about?
Oh, absolutely. That's a fantastic example. Something completely unrelated to the task at hand. And there are a number of things going on there. I mean, it's a complicated equation. Let me give you another example that you'll like. I was, as a writer, I was writing a story about a yo-yo tournament not long ago. And I was writing about this, and I met a woman there, and her son, but two of her teenage sons, were involved in the tournament. So she was present there watching them in the competition. And she, by trade, she is a gynecologist, obstetrical gynecologist, a surgeon. And she told me something that blew my mind. It's very parallel to your ballroom dancing example. She, by dint of the fact that her sons were involved in competitive yo-yoing, she dabbled in it as well. She found that the way she learned to handle a yo-yo in terms of how its string behaved was, she was able to apply that behavior to the way her suture thread behaved in the OR. So incredibly enough, she was able to apply learning that she developed, experiential stuff that she engaged in during this yo-yo tournament, into the OR. And I just found that to be incredible, yet not at the same time, because that's just the way life works. Life is one big interconnected experience. And we do ourselves a terrible disservice to chop it up into tiny little silos that we insist have nothing to do with each other.
Well, it's funny because you talk about, being a Renaissance person and you're doing, you're doing so many different things. You're a specialist, but then, you're recommending that we do something that's totally different. Don't you find that most people want to have less to do in their lives and not more?
That's a common misperception. There's a big movement out there these days. Simplify, simplify, simplify. And I want you to know, I do approve of that at the level of environmental clutter. In other words, junky stuff around the house. We all fall victim to the clutter syndrome around the house. So in that sense, we do need to get rid of clutter and do less, have less and do less. But when it comes to our brain development, Sheila, and in terms even of our satisfaction with our lives generally, we need to be doing more, ironically enough. Most people think we're too busy, too, much, much, much in this society. I would posit that we need to be doing more. Our brains are malnourished and undernourished. They crave novelty. They crave experience. My theory in my book is that we are all mentally undernourished because We don't have enough to do in our lives, believe it or not. So I think this business of being mentally malnourished is a dominant yet unacknowledged malady of our era.
Now, do you think, because, and, you know, I know you're not saying, you know, to dilute the things that you're doing. You know, you still can concentrate on things and do more things. But I guess my question would be, you know, the world would lose a lot of its intellectual edge if everyone were Renaissance people, wouldn't it?
Possibly it would, yeah. But, you know, the good thing about it is the world will always be full of people who are by nature specialists and those of us who are by nature generalists. And if we were all doing what we were best at in this life, it would all work out just fine. Yes, as we have said, we need and want narrowly focused specialists in this world. They supply our culture with so much of its juice. But my point that I make, the thesis in my book, is that generalists have been unsung and derided as being jack-of-all-traders, dilettantes, you know, master of everything. Generalists are, you know, jack-of-all-trades,
right,
master of none.
Right, yeah, I've heard
Yeah, that's
that.
What I'm trying to say. And I think that is a shame. I think it's clearly a put-down, and we're in a mess because not enough of us think broadly, in fact. That disaster was made manifest over the last couple of years with this recession and the environmental crisis. Not enough people were thinking in a big picture way as generalists. They were thinking about their tiny little narrow sliver of the pie, and look what a mess it's gotten us into.
Now, I've heard you say something I wanted to ask you about. Now, you liken the internet to a free lunch. What do you mean by that?
Well, the internet is just, I mean, for someone who is by nature a Renaissance person, a generalist, a cross-trainer, brain cross-trainer, these are all synonyms that I use in my book. The internet is just like, well, as some people have called it, it's just heroin for people, you know, in a good sense, for people who just can't get enough and see life as a great big banquet or a buffet table. The reason why is because at the click of a mouse, if you've got an internet connection, you have access. Certainly, yes, there's a lot of dross out there on the internet. We all know that. But there is also tons of good stuff. The bounty of the ages awaits. All you have to do is click your right index finger and boom, there it all is. And I think many of us just freeze up at the prospect of so much bounty. And I think so many of us just sort of sit on the couch and veg out watching TV or veg out in front of the computer instead of taking advantage of the wisdom of the ages. All the science, literature, art, everything you want is right there at your mouse pad. And I think it has given birth to people that are not professionals in the sense we typically think of professionals as being. They're amateurs, but they're able to play at the level of professionals because they have access to so much knowledge.
Yeah, I see that. I actually see that a lot in the medical field, and maybe that's because I was in the medical field for so many years. But, you know, I find I do that myself. You know, if the doctor says, oh, well, you know, you've got this ailment or you've got this, you know, take this drug, first thing I do is I come back, you know, I come home and I boot up my computer and I look that up. And, you know, I think you're right. I think there are a lot of people who, you know, who look at that as a bounty, like you said, that, you know, they can go and you know, spend their time looking up that information so that they're a little more aware. And, you know, I know that I do that a lot. So
I make mention in my book, The Vigorous Mind, a couple instances of where I've gotten a little sideways with some of those in the medical profession because I do just what you do, Sheila. I look it all up. And not all doctors appreciate a patient standing toe-to-toe, eye-to-eye, and talking to them as a fellow medical professional. So, you know, it can get into a little bit of a sticky wicket, but I like it.
Yeah, I know, me too. Okay, now, it seems ludicrous to think that someone could learn to play the violin or chess or cooking or ballroom dancing in 20-minute increments. Can you explain that?
Yeah, I make a mention in my book, something called Triumph in 20, and this is the way you apply Kaizen, which we were talking about earlier, the concept, the Japanese concept that has to do with continuous process improvement. If you take just 20 minutes, say just 3 times a week to pursue whatever it is you want, whether it's ballroom dancing or the violin or cooking or chess, whatever it may be, you will make incredible progress by doing that. And no, I will concede, you will not be at Juilliard with your violin playing at that rate. That is full-time commitment if you're interested in true mastery. But most of us are not interested in that level of mastery. 20-minute increments, 3 times a week, whatever your goal is, I submit to you, it will stimulate your brain. You will have a richer experience of life for just that small commitment of time. So this is my answer to people say, hey, Ingrid, I don't have time to be a Renaissance person. I don't have time even to live my life as it is now. And this is what I say. You have 20 minutes. That's what I say.
So does your vigorous mind model apply to people who identify themselves as happy specialists?
Yeah, and that's a good point. There are a lot of people out there who are specialists. I think of Michael Jordan, who is very happy. To work in basketball, and he does. He's not an individual you would call to build your deck or design your flower garden or be a child psychologist. This is not what he does. He is, as far as I know, extremely happy and content to be a specialist in the field of basketball. So some people, yes, are happy and content as specialists. Others, if they identify themselves as needing or wanting or having a vigorous mind, they're going to want to exercise the entirety of their brain.
Well, then let me ask you: Are you opposed to so-called time wasters like TV?
Everybody thinks that I would be after TV. I happen to love TV. I like all media, and I think TV is underrated. I think I know there's bad TV out there. I don't watch it. I watch great TV, and if someone wants to label TV generally as being a time waster, so be it. There is room in every life for some so-called wasted time, because you will find, like you with your ballroom dancing, you might think, oh, it's just a frivolous pastime. It isn't actually at all. It is building your brain, no different than anything else is capable of building your brain. So I think actually a lot of the good quality TV is a brain builder, and I love it. I love most of it. I could, if we had more time, I could list 20 shows that I think are just terrific on TV.
And I'm so happy to. I hardly ever watch TV, but I have 3 or 4 shows that I watch them because they're clever, because they're funny, because it's escapism, or I watch National Geographic shows, stuff like that. So it's like, well, it's good to know that's not necessarily a waste of my time. You've described the pursuit of a Renaissance lifestyle as being spiritual, and I wanted to know, what do you mean by that exactly? And just so you know, we have about 2 minutes left. But if you could just touch on that a little bit, I'd appreciate it.
Well, I think that a Renaissance quest, attempting to build a bigger, more vigorous, more cross-trained mind, can rise to the level of providing meaning for your life, and that is de facto spirituality. It can give your life meaning, direction, and purpose, and not just in a selfish way. This is a pursuit that you can develop on your own and then spread out to family and friends and loved ones and make yourself an exemplar, a model for other people. So I think it's highly spiritual, certainly can be.
Well, I could go on and on. You know that I definitely subscribe to everything that you're saying, and it's great to have everything so well presented in a book like yours. And I do want to make sure our listeners have your website address so they can learn more. You can find out more about Ingrid and about her book, The Vigorous Mind. I do want to say she does do speaking engagements. She is just so engaging. Definitely go over to her site and check it out. It is www.thevigorousmind.com. Now, Ingrid, We only have about a minute left, but I want to thank you so much for joining us, and maybe we can have you come back sometime later in the year and talk a little bit more about the other things you do.
I would be delighted to, and I want to just wish all of our readers a Happy New Year, and I want to suggest, if we have just a few seconds left, think not so much about New Year's resolutions, but make resolutions on a daily basis to live your best life, to do better in the spirit of Kaizen each day. Instead of thinking about it as a year-long project, make your resolution on a daily basis.
Great. And we want to thank our listeners for joining us here at Readers Entertainment Radio. This show will be downloadable within the hour, and we hope that you'll come back and visit us next Friday. Now, starting January 28th, we will be on Thursdays at 6 p.m. EST. I'm your host, Sheila English, and happy reading. Thank you so much for joining us.